Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we visit with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Family owned and operated since 1960. She's been a regular on our show for a long time and really pleased to have her back again to be with us. So if you have some questions, and we'll probably zero in a bit on the flowers and the shrubs today, maybe the lawn, we certainly welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Karen, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a beautiful day today, isn't it?
Beautiful day today. And, you know, Wisconsin's had some weird weather in some parts of the state, Door County, and some parts of the north, not any rain or almost none. Southern Wisconsin, lots and lots of rain, and that's had some effect on our flower beds for sure.
It sure has. And the thing we have to remember is before we got all the rain, we had a lot of drought. And so time is going to tell how some of our trees are going to make it over the winter. And I know memories are short. And we had a lot of damage. A lot of the trees were very damaged before we finally got some rain. So hopefully some of them were able to recover. But unfortunately, I think that there's going to be some permanent root damage. So just some messages for next year. Watch what the weather's doing. And if we don't get at least an inch of rain a week, you're going to want to supplement, especially some of the thirsty trees like birch and that, because I think we had some root damage and we're going to need to be a little more proactive next year, depending on what the weather's doing.
Especially with those trees. But what about flower beds? Let's talk a little bit about that, fall plantings.
Yeah. I was gone for a week, and I came back, and I literally had things that were rotted and just dead because things just got so drowned. And so right now what you can do, some things look great. Other things that are just totally wiped out, just pull them out, and you can put some things in for fall color. There are a few things, even our hanging baskets like petunias, that really struggled during all the clouds and rain. But you find on those you can just trim them back and give them a nice dose of fertilizer, and there's still time to bring those back. But for your flower beds that you just want to get some nice fall color, pull out some of those dead annuals, and there's lots of things you can plant right now, luckily. The fall blooming pansies are one of my favorites. You put them in now. And if you plant them in the ground, they're going to bloom very, very late until we get hard frost. They'll take down into the mid-20s easily. The neat thing about the fall-blooming pansies is they'll come back and bloom again next spring early before any of the other annuals are out. They typically do best in the ground. Sometimes they will winter over in a container, but that's a little tougher because of the freezing and the thawing. But fall pansies are great. There is the ornamental kale and cabbage that's just starting to mature, and that only gets more beautiful with the cool nights.
Sure.
The hardy mums are just starting to bloom, and they're going to give you a lot of color. Then there's the asters. Again, they're just starting to bloom. And then there's a few of the perennials, like Rudbeckia, that you can still pick up at the nurseries that are in full bloom, hardy hibiscus. So there's lots of choices to plump up your garden and give it some color and put us in a much better mood again.
Well, we have a caller from Dick in Lake Villa next. Dick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a Concord grape vine. It's loaded with grapes. About 3 weeks ago, I picked a bunch of grapes, and I made some juice out of it. It was the sourest stuff I've ever had. So I waited, and about 3 days ago, I tried it again, and it's still sour. How do you tell when Concord grapes are ripe?
Well, doing the taste test like what you've done is one thing, and just kind of peeking at a couple websites, they talk about an actual little device that you can take the grapes and squeeze them and measure the sugar content. So what I would recommend is go out on the web. And
I don't have a computer.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Well,
I usually do is pick them and taste them.
That's the best way.
And then if you're making wine, though, there are, you know, the wine growers.
The hydrometer.
Yeah, they have the hydrometers that actually measure the sugar content. And so that would, so obviously they don't have a real easy way either, and they actually use a device for that.
There's nothing you can tell by color, huh?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm not a grape expert. I don't know.
Well, I've had them for a long time, and I'm not either.
Okay.
The vine is underwater.
Oh, shoot.
The base of it. Okay. But I've got more grapes this year than I ever had.
Well, yeah. Good. I hope it is able to get the water drained off of there and make it over the winter for you.
Well, I'll try tasting them in a couple of days.
Okay.
All right, Dick. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Nick in Milwaukee, you are next. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I had a bunch of plants that I had bought earlier in the summer, and I still wanted to plant them, but I haven't got around to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could tell me, is it still too late? Is it too late, or is it still good?
Well, what kind of plants? Are we talking about perennials or shrubs?
Perennials.
Or?
Most of them are like sedums, and I have some hens and chicks and some prickly pear cactus.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of going to be a succulent area.
Sure. Oh, there's plenty of time to plant. You know, you're going to want to get them in fairly soon so that they get a chance to root and establish for winter. But, boy, we don't typically even get our first light frost down around here until the first week of October. So definitely get them in. Be a little careful if you're in a very wet area. Working the soil when it's real wet sometimes can actually damage it. It breaks the soil structure, kind of like scrambling an egg almost. Once you scramble that egg, you'll never get the yolk and the white separated again. So you should be able to take a clump of soil and squeeze it gently, and you should be able to crumble it. If you just have a handful of mud, you might want to wait a day or two. We're supposed to have a really nice weekend and let things dry up just a bit.
Okay, good luck. Thank you, Nick. Don in Pittsville, on to you. Hi, Don.
Yes. I was wondering, you know, about, I'm not sure what the name is for, I think they call it buckthorn.
Buckthorn?
Buckthorn,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really taken over in the ditches and any, you know, spot, you know, that isn't cultivated, that's in the open.
Mm-hmm.
They're proliferating here that you cannot believe it. I mean, I cut some down last fall, and then they came back bigger and better than ever, and I used Roundup on them, and that didn't seem to phase them.
Okay, when you use the Roundup, the typical recommendation is to make your fresh cut and then use undiluted Roundup. You've got to get the Roundup concentrate, not the ready-to-use. And it is labeled for that, so make sure you look at the label and check that you have the right product. And if you apply it immediately after you do the cut, and a really good tool for that is a foam paintbrush, one of those disposable paintbrushes. Did you try it that way, or how did you actually apply the Roundup?
I used the regular Roundup according to recommendation. I got the concentrate, you know, where you add a certain amount of water to it and all that.
Okay. Yeah. Use it undiluted. Reread that label and the and make sure you get a concentrate, and it has a line on there that talks about killing brush, and you need to use it undiluted. You're not going to use any water with it.
So do that.
And try that.
And keep at it.
Yeah, that's about all you can do. There are some stronger brush killers that you can try, but Roundup is one of the more environmentally safer. It's not totally safe, but one of the safer herbicides. So I would try that and make sure you're using it undiluted and see if that works for you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Don. Alan LaCrosse, your turn. Hi, Al. Thank you for calling.
Hi. This may sound like a very silly question, but I grow tomatoes every year, and I'm very happy with them. But when I grow the tomatoes, I put cages around them.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now the tomatoes then grow up beyond the cages and lap over, and then they get cut off so those branches don't produce good tomatoes. Now, I understand I have posts in the middle, and you can tie one or two branches to a post up there, but when you get five or six branches growing up that high, and I have good tomatoes, then I seem to lose a lot of the tomatoes. Now, do they make any kind of a structure, any kind of a unit that I could use to protect those branches? What do the commercial tomato producers do to not lose the branches by either growing up and then bending over?
Well, using the stakes, you know, there's several different ways of growing tomatoes. Some people just let them run rampant in the garden, and that doesn't work so well because the fruits lay in the dirt.
But then some animals seem to get it.
What a lot of growers do is actually disbud them. And so you allow them to come up, and you just select two or three vines. And then you typically are going to get a little bit larger fruit, and you're not going to just let every single vine grow. So as they're growing, just kind of select a couple of the vines and pinch out some of those side shoots, and that might work a little bit better for you.
And just the two or three.
Right, right. And try that and see if that helps you out.
You should wind up with actually more yield.
Yeah, I think you will in the long run. Just let them all come.
All right. Okay. And thank you much.
You're welcome.
Yep, thanks, Al. And that was Alan LaCrosse. Let's go to Alan Westby. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. Labor Day weekend approaches and suggested two more times for lawn fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have or know where I can get, and I should have something like a 20-0-10, is that correct? Here in Vernon County, we don't have any restriction, but lawn doesn't need that.
Well, yes, we do have a fall fertilizer that is phosphorus-free, and years ago, they used to always talk about putting a lot of potassium on the lawn and no nitrogen in the fall. The three numbers, for the people that don't know, the first number is nitrogen. The second number is phosphorus, which they do not in Dane County want us to add any to the lawn if we don't need to. And the third number is phosphorus, and that's typical for root shoots. But after years of research, they have determined that, yes, you definitely do want to add the nitrogen in the fall. So adding like a 20-0-10 is a good recommendation. And if you're only going to fertilize once a season, fall is your most important time to fertilize because the little shoots in the grass are actually forming their buds, and this fall for what the growth is going to be next spring. So definitely you could fertilize now and then once again in October.
Halloween time.
Yep, Halloween. Or you could even wait and skip the fertilizing now if you don't feel like you want to. And just if you're only going to do it one more time, wait and do it more like in October. And also if you want to kill weeds, fall, meaning October, is an excellent time to kill weeds because they are starting to store their carbohydrates down into their roots, getting ready for winter naturally. So when you apply a liquid herbicide to them or even a granular herbicide, the weed will push all that herbicide down into the root as well. And so you get a better kill that way.
I just cannot find anything in this area except that it's got a high phosphorus number and not a good mix.
Well, gosh, I don't know. In Madison, you're going to find
everywhere.
Everywhere. We have it at Johansson's, but because we've got the restrictions, we've been able to purchase, you know, the fertilizer specifically. So, gosh, you definitely probably don't need to add any phosphorus. So I think a 20-0-10 would be good or numbers similar to that. And in your area, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I think it's worth a trip and then go to Plaza or
come on down to Madison, taking a football game or the farmer's market or something like that.
Thanks, Al. Thanks a lot for calling. We have some open lines again, so we can get you on, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Karen Johansson, our guest today of Johansson's Greenhouses, Jim Packard, our producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Karen Johansson, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll get right back to the phones and to Gail in Wauwatosa. Gail, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a suggestion for the gentleman who wanted to figure out how to keep the tomatoes upright.
Good.
And I must say I got this, and I would say hello to Bernie Saley in Madison, who was my former landlord years ago. And he gave me this idea. He used old wooden ladders. And I'm using this now in Wauwatosa in my backyard garden. And so you plant the plants between the, you know, the rungs. If you put the ladder parallel to the ground and stake it up a foot or two high, and then you can plant some of the more viney type. I have zucchini and tomatoes and cucumbers and all these wonderful things planted in between the rungs of the ladders.
So you lay the let me see if I've got this right. You lay the ladder essentially flat.
Flat.
And then you
parallel to the ground.
And then you get them up off the ground.
Yep.
Get the ladder up off the ground with some sawhorses or something.
Yeah, and actually we just put posts on the corners and attach them to the posts because we figure we're going to do this for years to come.
Just kind of like a natural lath system then.
Yeah.
Oh, that
exactly.
Sounds great. Yeah.
And it's just fun because the one we went to the dump, actually. and retrieved these old ladders out of the dump, and people are looking at us. But, you know, what a wonderful way to recycle.
Yeah, it sure is. It sounds like a great yeah.
great idea. Thanks, Gail.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. That's cool. Al in Two Harbors, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hi. I found out recently that I was supposed to clip the lilac flowers off as soon as they were done flowering, mm-hmm. and I didn't. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the little green seed things, and now they're kind of just sitting there. And should I cut them off now, or should I wait till the spring, or will I do damage to next year's flowers if I
cut them now? Would you?
Yeah, you know, you could just cut the old dead flower shoots off, but I certainly wouldn't go in and cut down into any of the bud growth because they've set their buds for next year. It wouldn't hurt the shrub, but you will definitely reduce your flowering. So only cut off just the dead flower parts and just be real careful with that.
Okay.
And then typically next year, then as soon as they're done blooming, you can trim the lilacs at will. You can take them down about a third of the height if you want to. You can also go in and thin out some of the heaviest old growth from the base, and then that'll encourage some shoots going all the way down in and make a prettier bush. But lilacs are pretty resilient, but boy, I wouldn't want to do much pruning on them now.
No, nope.
just the old dead bud.
Yeah, just be real careful and mm-hmm. real conservative with that.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Joya in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Joya.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for two questions for Karen. Is it too late to plant the shrub roses?
It certainly is not. The only problem is I think you might have a hard time finding them being available. Shrub roses are pretty hardy. They're pretty dependable. The only reason why I hesitate planting other roses in the fall is because sometimes they winter kill and you want to at least get your first season of enjoyment out of them. But if you can find some shrub roses around, certainly get them planted. You might want to use like a root stimulator, which is a liquid thing you dilute when you're all done planting. Pour that in to get the roots to come out. And you may want to do some late winter mulching just as an extra insurance package. Very late, after the ground is frozen. And I'm talking around here, Fitchburg, sometimes almost Christmas until the ground is frozen. You want to mound that up. We'll put about an extra foot of soil around the base of the plant, and when that's totally frozen, then you can add some evergreen boughs. Your Christmas tree, if you have one on the 1st of January, is a great free source of that. And just to keep that mound frozen and to give a little more consistent temperature. Generally, with shrub roses, you don't need to winter mulch, but just if the fall planting ones will give you a little extra insurance.
Thank you. Quick question about peonies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year the peonies got all bitten by Japanese beetle and all these things. So I'm wondering whether I should take off those leaves and branches now or should I wait until the spring?
I would wait until the peonies get frozen real well and they turn yellow, and then I just take my weed whacker to mine and just clean them up. Otherwise, you certainly can wait till spring to clean them up, but you want to make sure you get out there early enough before the new shoots start coming, because then it gets kind of difficult not to damage them. But as long as they're still green and growing, I would leave them on.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're
thanks,
welcome.
Joya. Nick in New Berlin, on to you. Hi, Nick.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding tree diseases. I have a, I'm not sure of the type of tree. It's about 15, 20 feet tall, has kind of a dark burgundy or wine-colored leaves on it. And it has this these dark black clumps that are forming around the branches near the ends.
Oh.
And my neighbor said it's called black knot disease. But
yep.
And he said, be very careful, clip them off and burn them, because he lost one or two trees to this as well.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you can give me some advice as to how I can treat this and trim it safely.
Well, it sounds like it's probably on a prunus type of flowering plum, because that black knot does like to attack that. And your neighbor is right. You want to cut it out literally below where you see it. And sometimes that's enough, but depending on where the black knot is attacking, sometimes it's hard to trim. And then there are fungicides to use along with it, but off the top of my head, I can't tell you the exact timing on it. So if you'd like to call me at the greenhouse later, I can look it up for you or check at the University Extension's website. I'm sure they've got a pamphlet on that. But your neighbor's right, cutting it out. But there is a fungicide you can use, but I just don't know the exact timing on it.
You also need to be sanitizing your cutting
right.
shears in between cuts.
Interesting.
Otherwise, okay. you could...
Yeah, you transfer it all over the place.
Right. Well, that's a good thing to keep in mind. Okay. All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Usually a bleach solution of some sort, isn't
yeah.
it, Karen?
Yeah, and I don't know if black knot is systemic in that, moving it around. I just would have to look that up. We don't sell the shrubs, and that's one I haven't looked up for a while. But I do know I have the information at work.
Thanks very much for calling. And Dave and Dresser, and I'll try to look that up a little bit online and see if what I can come up with, too. Dave and Dresser, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello. I've got a comment for the gentleman with the Concord grapes.
Sure.
In this area here, several years ago, there was a gentleman who worked with the University of Minnesota developing grapes. I think it was the K grape that he had worked with, and... some of the folks around here said that he had always told them that he felt the grapes would be at their sweetest after we got our first frost.
Okay.
After the first frost, yeah. Yeah, and actually, if you think about it, the winemakers, those very, very sweet wines that come from Germany, they will let those grapes sit on the plants until they are literally shriveled up, right to the to very, very cold conditions, and then you wind up with the very, very sweetest. And obviously, you're not going to want to do that because they look like a prune then. There's probably some. I'm sure there's some truth to what you say. That's for sure.
On my own experiments with the wild grapes, it seems to be definitely true.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You usually wait till about the middle of October then.
Well. It's a race with the birds.
Yep, okay.
It's a race with the birds. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, just like Barb in Milwaukee has done. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm interested in why my tomato leaves all fell off at about the end of July. They were great-looking bushes. I have tomatoes now, but my plants are completely naked of leaves. And I watered and fed and did my best, but this is a funny-looking bunch of tomatoes.
Well, they could have lost leaves for a few different reasons. If you're in our, in the Dane County area, we had a lot of drought and the water didn't really start turning on until about the middle of August. But you said you watered. Were you watering thoroughly,
yeah.
really deeply?
Yeah.
Tomatoes will also lose leaves from various leaf blights. And typically those start out and with the leaves will kind of get yellow and they'll get little brown spots that have like a little halo. Did you notice any
yes.
of that?
Yes.
Okay. That's what it sounds like then. You've got some early or late blight, and that's a fungal thing. And typically, like what you found out, that they'll still bear fruit, but obviously without leaves, that's going to hamper your harvest somewhat. A few things you can do. There are fungicides that are labeled for late and early blight. You want to start early at the very first sign, and there's sprays. Keep in mind that the blights will winter over in the soil. So if it's an option for you, move your tomatoes for next year. If you can put them in a different spot of the garden, mulching the soil so that when it rains, the soil doesn't splash up onto the plants. That will also help you sterilize all of your tomato towers or your tomato supports because the disease will also stay on that. So use some bleach. Finally, there are some varieties of tomatoes that are a lot more susceptible to the blight. So when you're shopping, you might want to keep track of the variety names and keep your own little research, but some of them are more blight resistant than others.
Yes, I had early girls. These were pretty much all early girls that I had grown from seed. and they really went down.
Yeah, early girl does get blight sometimes, so I would definitely try growing a different variety of tomato next year.
Okay.
Or maybe even try a couple different varieties and see which ones do better for you. But, you know, just try and clean up your garden really well this fall. Take away all the old debris and don't put it in the compost bin. Get rid of it. And just try to do some physical cleanup, and that might help you out too.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Rick in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
This is kind of a pruning question. I've got a number of gold flame spireas and little princess spireas littered about in the front and backyard, and they've gotten out of hand over the last couple of years. I've got some green, then I've got some dead areas. I'm curious about pruning. When and how far down do I take them?
Well, I probably wouldn't want to tell you to prune them now because I'm afraid it might initiate a bunch of new growth that's going to be a little less winter hardy. And the gold flames tend to bloom in the middle of the summer. So doing an early spring pruning, I think, is going to be your best bet. And, I mean, obviously right now, if anything's dead, you can prune that out. But I would prune early, even before they leaf out or they're just starting to leaf out, end of March, beginning of April. And you can do what's called renewal pruning. Not only take some of the overall height, but go down and thin them, take some of the growth out from the base at various points because that'll allow the light in there and that's where the buds are going to break. If you just do that haircut method where you just take off the top, that's where all your new growth is going to come from. And after a few years of doing that, you get a pretty ugly looking plant. But I would probably wait.
Okay.
All right.
And then, like you said, get rid of the dead stuff now.
Yeah.
And then next spring, nail them.
Yeah, yep. I think, and those will leaf out, and do it early, and I think you'll be in good shape.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Amy and Ladysmith. Excuse me. Amy, hi.
Hi. My question is, throughout this summer, I've had problems with small brown bugs eating completely my Chinese lanterns. And I spray them at the first sign of them, and, of course, they're very resilient. They come back to Chinese lanterns, but the bugs also come back. It seems like as soon as the label it says 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, there they are.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you're saying small, are they Japanese beetles? Do you know what are chewing on them?
No, they're not beetles. They're actually, they look almost like a fly, but they're light brown, and they do fly, and I noticed that they were not only on the Chinese lanterns, but also some of the tiger lilies that I had with them.
And they're almost...
They eat the entire thing.
Yeah, they're like a flea almost. They almost hop, real black, shiny. Because there's flea beetles that are small that really, they love tomatoes and stuff. What were you spraying with?
You know, it was an ortho. I had bought something from ortho. It was like aphids and stuff. And and it did kill them, and they'd come back. But as soon as, you know, 2 weeks was up, they were right back there at it again.
Well, ortho is a brand name, and they package all different types of
like
chemicals.
It was a multi-purpose spray, and that's all that I had had around, but I didn't know what to spray them with.
Well, I'm not sure exactly of the insect that you have, and, you know, trying to identify the insect would be helpful because you'd get a little bit more idea what the life cycle is. But what a general all-purpose good garden pesticide is one that's called the number 8. And I would, that you can use, you know, every 4 or 5 days, according to the label. So you might be able to use it a little more often. So if this particular insect has a really fast life cycle, also switching off on some of the pesticides, you know, switching them up might help you too. And all you can do is keep at it. But yeah, trying to wait 2 weeks on some of the insects is just kind of too long. And then there are some organics that you could try as well, like neem might help you out. It makes the plant a little less flavorful for the insect. So you might want to just try switching some of the varieties of the pesticides that you're using.
Okay. And will it carry, I hope not, will it carry over, do you think, in the spring, or should I pull, you know, I pull them out usually in the in the fall.
Well, any insect, leaving the old debris, a lot of perennial growers like to leave all the old leaves because they like the way the seed pods look and stuff. I personally am a fall cleaner. I like to just get rid of everything because I don't have time to do it in the spring. And eliminating some of the old growth will definitely give the insects less place to hide. But again, I'm not positive of the insect you have, and some of the insects burrow down into the ground. So
I've never seen them before. So.
Well, sometimes,
all right, thank you.
One last thing. Sometimes if you take a picture of him and email him to the entomology department, they can sometimes identify him online for you and then give you a little more information.
Yeah, the insect the University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab. That's where you can just put that in your search engine. It'll pop up. You can send a picture, and Phil Pelletieri, the entomologist, he does this all the time. He'll take a look, and he'll tell you what you have, Amy. Thank you for calling. By the way, the caller who had a black knot problem, I'm just reading that you should be pruning 2 to 4 inches below each knot of the fungus, because the fungus grows beyond the edge of the knot itself. And if you've got some that are in a spot where you can't cut below, they still recommend cutting it out at least a half inch beyond the edge of the knot. If you're on a major limb or something like that where you can't take it off, but you can cut, sort of excise it, I guess. Oh, we could say.
And what does it say about spraying?
Spraying, I haven't got to that part yet, but I'll get to that. Let's go to Susan in Madison. Susan, hello to you.
Good morning. Good
morning.
I have a possible remedy for the lady with the early blight, because a bunch of my tomato plants succumbed to it this year. And I talked to the fungus guy at Urban Agriculture, and he recommended a solution of a tablespoon of baking soda in a gallon of water.
Okay.
And you should probably put a little bit of dish soap or an insecticidal soap, just a squirt of it in there as a surfactant, but spray the leaves every week or, you know, according to rain. Apparently it changes the pH and makes it unfriendly to the blight bacteria.
Oh, great.
And it's organic and friendly, and you don't have to disinfect your soil. By the way, great tip on disinfecting the cages. That never even occurred to me, and my blight got worse this year than it was last year. So thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Run that by us once more, your treatment.
A tablespoon of baking soda in a gallon of water.
Okay.
And add to it about a squirt of dish soap to help it penetrate the leaves, to help the leaves absorb the water better.
Got it. Thank you. Susan, appreciate the call. Janice, on to you in Shiocton. Thank you very much for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
How do I trim a trumpet vine to get it to bloom?
Trumpet vines sometimes can be a little stubborn, and once they start blooming, they bloom pretty well. I wouldn't prune it much at all. And if you're trying to get it to bloom, I would leave it alone.
Well, once they grow, they take over everything.
Uh-huh.
And I've got runners from here to you, practically.
Well, then just take some of the side shoots out and take some of the overall size. But again, you want to be a little careful about pruning them too heavily.
And when do you do that?
Boy.
In the spring or now? Or?
That I'd have to look up. I am not positive off the top of my head. That's not coming to me.
Okay, and you have you been fertilizing that a lot?
Nope.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
you don't want to be fertilizing.
They grow in the poorest soil and through the roof and everywhere.
Yeah, I think you prune those in the spring, but I'd have to look that up. I'm sorry, that's just not.
We'll check on that and see what I can come up with.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can call in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'll get you on pretty quickly. Have some open lines. Let's go to, by the way, on the spraying, there is a fungicide spray schedule, and I think what people is best to do would be to go to the University of Wisconsin Extension publications. And they've got something there that outlines a spraying schedule for black knot. So that's rather than try and go through it here. Julie in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. We have an apple tree. It's 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's leaning so much, it's almost at like a 45-degree angle with the ground. Can I tie that up or stake it up? We did it a few years ago, which was fine for a little while, and then it just started leaning again. So would I hurt it? We finally got a fruiting off it this year, so I really don't want to damage it. So.
Why do you think it keeps wanting to lean? You think it's from the wind? Or?
It's leaning east, so it might be from the wind.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
You know, there's definitely, tying up trees is a good idea, especially when they're new, so that they root in so they don't literally get blown out of the ground on you. But I would gently pull it up. But sometimes if you tie a tree too tight, it doesn't naturally get enough strength. Do you think it's heavier on one side that you could maybe do some selective pruning and try to take out some of the weight on the one side along with trying to pull it up with the tying? That might help. When you do go to tie it up, make sure you don't constrict it. A lot of times using a piece of old garden hose that you slip a rope through is, you know, so it's nice and it's soft, and you don't want to tie it too tight that you actually girdle the tree. That's something to keep in mind too, and you might want to tie it in a couple different spots so that it still can, you know, with a couple different ropes, so it still can move a little bit in the wind. And you might have to do it just gently, kind of almost like, you know, adjusting braces on a kid's teeth. You know, pull it up a little bit and then cinch it up a little bit more so that you don't break it.
Should I try and get it up by the end of next year to straight?
Well,
or
just
how much should I adjust it?
I think I would just see how it goes. I wouldn't torque on it too much because you don't want to break it. So just kind of be gentle with it and gently just keep moving the rope a little bit and tightening it that way. And then, like I said, do a little bit of selective pruning and try to pull the weight off of the one side if that's practical.
Do you think we should make this more permanent, or once we get it fully upright and leave it there for a little while, do you think we could take it off then, or should we make it a permanent attachment?
Well, I think that's going to be something you're just going to have to trial and error, but yeah, I think, you know, eventually you'd want the tree to be able to stand on its own, so I think it's going to have to just be see how it goes.
But we won't damage it?
Not if you pull it gently. You just don't want to break it.
Okay.
And don't girdle it. You know what I mean by that?
Right.
You know, don't, you know, okay, make sure that you, sometimes people use nylon stockings, you know, pieces mm-hmm. of old nylon stockings because they give also. And so, you know, and wrap that around and tie them up with that. But I don't know if those will be long enough or strong enough. But I've used, like I said, a piece of garden hose with a rope pushed through the garden hose. And so that gives it some mm-hmm. give.
Okay.
All right.
And then tent stakes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And as far as the trumpet vines, it's usually best to prune them after just following the growth, kind of like with lilacs and such.
Yeah, right after in the spring after they. Okay.
Yeah, because they like wisteria, apparently they flower on the growth from the previous year. So if you're cutting them late. Oh.
Yeah, and if they bloom off old growth, that's why I knew you want to be a little careful how much you prune them. Some of that stuff I just can't keep all in my head anymore. It's getting full up there.
Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Really pleased to have her along. Before we get back to the phones, I do want to mention that I'll be broadcasting live from Manitouish Waters next week on Thursday. And it's a free show. It's the regular show. And I'll be broadcasting from where the annual World Muskie Championship Fishing Classic will be held. And I'll be fishing that, I guess. I'm sure I will be, as a matter of fact. But for Thursday, we'll focus on a little bit on fishing, a little bit on lake ecology, and we've got some great guests in store, and we'll be at the Manitouish Waters Community Center Pavilion. So if you get to Manitouish Waters, you're not going to have any trouble finding that pavilion, and I'm looking forward to being there. Again, no cost to get in. We're looking to get a big crowd, and we hope you can come. So that's next week on Thursday from 11 to 12:30. Come a little bit early, and I'll probably answer a few questions off air as well. So looking forward to that. Right now, though, it's Garden Talk with Karen Johansson, and we'll go to Julie in Sturgeon Bay. Julie, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem in my garden with the squash vine borers, and I just had it like 3 years ago. I used to grow beautiful pumpkins and zucchini, and now everything, you know, the vines get shredded like sawdust, and I'm unable to do anything. So how I'm the only person probably in Wisconsin that can't grow zucchini.
Well, that's awful when you get that in there. All you can really do is cut the vines off past where the bore is and literally get that bore out of there and
mm-hmm.
then hope some of the side shoots come. They start out with the fly lays its eggs, so you have to go earlier. And since you've had problems with it before, I would, you know, spray with a general garden pesticide early, and I'd have to look up the exact timing, but all season long, so that you get them before the borer actually gets into that vine, because once it actually is in there, there's not a lot you can do about it. Some gardeners, organic gardeners, actually use what they call floating row covers, and it's just a physical barrier. It's like a white cloth, and some people have good success with that, but you have to kind of get at them before you see them, and since you've had the problems with them, and I don't know if the eggs winter over, it's always a good idea to really thoroughly clean up your garden in the fall as well. Get rid of all the old vines.
So there is a potential that they're in the soil from year after year?
Possibly, yeah. And I would be proactive next year and start spraying and just, again, I'd have to look that up on the extension at the timing, but that's something that you got to get at before they actually bore into the vine, because once they're there, there's not anything to do about them.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll have to go to the farmer's market and get some zucchini.
Oh, okay. Well, at least it's plentiful right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any
that's
problem.
That's the good news.
Stop by the neighbors.
Yeah.
There's probably plenty around your neighborhood there, Julie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, Aggie in Manitowoc, I think, is next. Hi, Aggie.
Hi. I've got a couple questions.
Okay.
I planted my poinsettia plant from Christmas outside, and it looks gorgeous.
Great.
Now, when do I bring it in, and when do I put it in dark, and for how long?
Okay. Well, what triggers the poinsettia into blooming is continuous darkness at night for at least 12 hours, but it has to have sun during the day. So it isn't a matter of just sticking the thing in the closet. You need to, first of all, they don't like to be cold, so watch the night temperatures. And as soon as the night temperatures start dipping much below 40 or so, I would bring it in. And literally at night, if you come home from work at 5:30, throw a box over the top of it. And then in the morning when you get up, after at least 12 hours of solid darkness, take the box off so it gets sun during the day. And it's uninterrupted darkness at night that's going to trigger it. And you need to do that for about 2 months. And in our area, if it's dark outside, the plant is dark when it's dark outside, that's the natural progression. We don't have to do any special shading in Wisconsin. If you live further south, like in Florida, they actually have to extend the length of their night there with shade cloth.
Okay.
So just bring it inside pretty soon in the next couple of weeks, towards the end of September, so it doesn't freeze, and just put the box on at night and take it off in the morning and do that for a couple months.
And here's the bad news. If somebody says, oh, what's this box, and picks the box up.
Oh, at night.
At night, you got to start.
If I have it in my closet.
You got to have it. You have to start all over again, so you have to be really careful.
Oh, yeah. Okay. For that night, yeah, if you just open that closet door and it lets light in there for a minute or 30 seconds, that's when it's going to think it got dark. And so it has to be that uninterrupted darkness for 12 hours at a time.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck, Aggie. Thank you for calling. John in Watertown, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi there. We have a maple tree in the backyard. Oh, it's probably 40 feet tall. It's probably only about 10 feet off from the house. And it has a vertical crack in the trunk. It goes from the ground up to where the tree first splits into limbs.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst I noticed was, last winter we had that real cold snap, and I could look out the window, and that, because of the cold, that was cracked open almost an inch. And now I'm looking at it, and I can just see, you have the stain. It has dark stain that weeps out of that. And, is there anything I can do with that? Is that eventually going to cause the demise of the tree, or
possible? Well, unfortunately, there are some varieties of maple that are actually more susceptible to having that narrow crotch angle as opposed to a wider one that doesn't cause the cracking. And unfortunately, once you get the cracking in there, there's not a lot you can do about it. And yes, I think it's going to be eventual demise of the tree. Now, if you wanted to, you could get an arborist, and an arborist is a person with special certification that is a tree expert. Have them come out and look at it. Sometimes for very valuable specimens of trees, they can put some type of
bolt
and bolt the thing together,
and
it might be a temporary fix, but you might get a few more years out of it. And if it's And it might live the way it is for a while until we get a really strong windstorm or the wind just from the right direction. But it definitely might, if it's a valuable tree and it's a nice-looking tree where it is right now, it definitely, I think it'd be worth having an arborist come out and see what they can do for you.
Well, even if it's just, I mean, it seems to be more superficial. I suppose eventually it's going to get deeper.
Yeah. Well, the general recommendation isn't to treat wounds anymore with tree paint.
Oh,
they say that actually hinders the healing process. So I don't think there's anything topical that you can do. I don't think wrapping it is really going to help. Sometimes maples and other trees, they recommend wrapping with paper for the winter just so you don't get that sun scald so it bursts over the winter, but not as a permanent thing. And so again, I think a visit by an arborist, they have them take a look at it and see if there's something they can do for you.
Thanks
a lot for calling. And, you know, we had a lot of kind of cracking and so forth on our trees. We had that dry weather. And then we got all that rain and the trees just sucked up the moisture. And those cells just couldn't expand fast enough and cracked.
Yeah, and that happens sometimes with fruits and tomatoes and all that kind of
everything.
Stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of
everything
blows up.
Scott and Madison, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello. I have a question about American hazelnuts. And before I get there, I want to mention on the cracking part for fruits, vegetables, and trees. If you water consistently throughout the dry season, you shouldn't have a problem
with
cracking.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So my question on American hazelnuts, I have a small prairie in my backyard, native plants from Wisconsin, and the hazelnuts appear to be spreading by suckers. And they're getting out of control. And my question is, can I cut the American hazelnuts down, say, after the first frost, and will they come back next year?
I don't know. That's like, luckily, it was, this whole show hasn't been this way, but I don't know anything about growing the hazelnuts. I'm sorry.
Somebody may know.
Yeah, so hopefully somebody can call and bail me out here. But I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that one.
Oh, that's all right.
Okay.
They are great, by the way. They do produce hazelnuts.
Oh, great.
And my shrubs are, well, three or four years old, and I'm getting hazelnuts the size that you might see in a grocery store.
Great.
Wow.
Wow.
Well,
yeah, they're also getting out of control.
Okay.
we'll see what we can come up with, Scott.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Tom in Sparta, I believe, is next. Tom, hello to you.
I have a question. I'm wondering if you might be able to answer some or give me some advice. I went to a farmer's market recently and got some really delicious cherries. I'm wondering if those might have come from the Midwest or if there's a type of a variety of cherry tree that would be hardy enough to grow in these conditions and produce something that was delicious.
Well, most of the best cherries come from the West Coast, and we don't sell trees and shrubs at our garden center, so I'm not up on the latest varieties of what cherry trees will grow in our neighborhood. I would check with the UW Extension. They might have some varieties, but, boy, I think we're too cold here for a lot of cherries.
Yeah, we get, well, Sparta might be a little bit cold.
Yeah.
But we've got a great cherry industry in Door County.
Yeah.
And in a couple other parts of the state. So you might want to check, go online to our UW Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store. I think that's where they have the publications. And there's a publication on growing fruit trees in Wisconsin. And I think they address cherries in that publication.
Great. They hopefully list some of the varieties on there.
Yeah. Or just go University of Wisconsin Extension. And then find the publications part of it and go to fruit trees. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Bob in Lindenhurst, Illinois is next. Bob, hi to you.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of questions. Initially, I have a coral bed, which is doing wonderfully on about four or five different varieties, but I just get like a sole bloom coming in, which is very... Well, compared to what you normally would expect, is that a light problem or a fertilization problem?
The phone cut out. I didn't hear the question.
Coral bells and coral bells with foliage doing well, but blooming is minimal to almost non-existent.
Okay.
Is it in coral bells can take some shade, but they definitely need some sun. How much? What's your light exposure worth?
I'd say it's getting about 50-50 sun and shade.
Okay, that might be a part of your problem. It might not be getting quite enough sun. I mean, they will tolerate some shade, but that is going to cut into your blooming a little bit. Have you fertilized them much at all?
Well, with Miracle-Gro, three or four times spring and summer.
Okay, so you have been fertilizing. That's about all that you can do with those. I'm just wondering if they're not in quite enough light.
I'll move them to another place because they do transplant readily.
They do, yeah. Absolutely.
Another question regarding your maples and the cracking. I have a Norway maple that is, I would call it more splitting than cracking. Is that probably a moisture issue also?
Sometimes it's a moisture issue. Sometimes it's a varietal issue and just the way the plant, the tree is put together and the weight. When you get these really narrow angles, they just sometimes crack. And some of the varieties are more susceptible to
that than others.
Norways are very susceptible. And then there's certain...
I'm talking about an actual branch that might have a split 10 to 18 inches down a branch. Is that the same thing you're referring to?
Yeah, or also, if you're just getting the cracking, it could be moisture. If it's a branch that you can sacrifice, you might want to just cut that out of there. But if it's a main branch, then it was just kind of one of those wait-and-see things.
Okay, very good. I certainly appreciate your help.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Virginia and Lena, Illinois, hi to you.
Hi, thank you. I have wonderful gophers or groundhogs that are eating up my garden. I don't think there's much. Well, I've tried putting poison out now. I don't know whether...
Well,
they're tough. You know, this year we're having a little resurgence of the white grubs, which we haven't seen for a few years. They actually have a 2 to 3 year life cycle. Have you dug in the soil? Are they after the grubs at all? Have you looked?
Gosh, I don't know. They ate my muskmelons.
They're just eating your fruits and stuff. Getting rid of those furry creatures is tough. You know, you have, there is some poisons you have to make sure they're labeled specifically for the nuisance animal. Sometimes you can trap them. I think that's something you might want to call a DNR.
Larry's got an idea. Yeah, and we'll talk some more about that. But first, we need to take a look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Net. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today is Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison, family-owned and operated since 1960, and they have a variety of annuals, perennials, houseplants, pond plants, wildflowers, and a whole lot more. And certainly, if you have some questions for Karen as we go along today, you're welcome to join in. I know we'll be talking about Chinese pagoda dogwoods. We'll be talking some more about maple trees. We'll talk a little about animals eating plants. There's sometimes not a lot to do with for that other than fencing, somehow keeping them out or eliminating them by killing them, and not everybody wants to do that. What about you? If you have a question for us about your plants, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And we'll be right back after this look at the news. Stay with us.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. White House spokesman Tony Snow says he will step down September 14th. President Bush says Dana Perino will replace Snow, who has been battling cancer. Snow praised Dana as a good choice.
She's an enormously capable woman, as you know, and somebody who more than capably filled my shoes while I was away on surgery.
Snow had previously announced his intentions to leave, citing financial reasons. Today in Washington, President Bush proposed several ideas to keep more homeowners from defaulting on risky mortgages that have spurred a widening credit crisis, but he says the government has a limit.
It's not the government's job to bail out speculators or those who made the decision to buy a home they knew they could never afford. Yet there are many American homeowners who could get through this difficult time with a little flexibility from their lenders or a little help from their government.
Meanwhile, the U.S. economy seems to be moving ahead quite well, according to just-released government economic figures. NPR's Adam Davidson has more.
Americans' income grew by 0.5% in July. That's considered a strong, healthy number. American spending also grew by a tiny bit less, showing that at least through July, U.S. consumption is continuing at an active clip. The biggest worry when people are making more money and spending more money is that inflation will come along as well. But that fear was allayed by the other key data released today, PCE, or personal consumption expenditure. It's a measure of how much prices are rising, and it's one of the main ways to check for inflation. PCE shows prices did rise in the year ending July 2007, but they didn't rise so fast as to cause inflation fears. Adam Davidson, NPR News, New York.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is again urging armed groups in his country to suspend their operations. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports from Baghdad.
On Wednesday, Shiite cleric Muqtada as-Sadr surprised many people in Iraq, including his own followers, when he ordered the Mehdi Army militia to freeze its operations for 6 months. The order came after Mehdi Army members were accused of starting a gun battle that took more than 50 lives during a festival in the Shiite holy city of Karbala. Since the order was given, some key leaders in the militia have offered differing interpretations of what it means. Some said that the order meant that they will act only in self-defense. Others said they would not stop attacks on U.S.-led occupation forces. Prime Minister Maliki's appeal could apply to many other militias, including the Badr organization, which the Mehdi Army was fighting in Karbala. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Baghdad.
From Washington, this is NPR News. More violence erupted across Afghanistan today. Two Afghan soldiers were killed in a suicide car bombing at an entrance to an airport in the capital. Authorities say at least 10 people were injured in that explosion. In eastern Afghanistan, in Kunar province, a provincial official says at least 10 civilians were killed in a mortar attack intended for a U.S. base. Britons are honoring the memory of Princess Diana on this 10th anniversary of her death. Larry Miller has details from London.
To a congregation comprised of Princess Diana's friends, relatives, divorced husband, and the Queen, the Bishop of London, Richard Charteris, said it's time to stop abusing Diana's memory.
There are regular reports of fury at this or that incident, and the Princess's memory is used for scoring points. Let it end here.
And then from Diana's youngest son, Prince Harry, holding back tears.
We both think of her every day. We speak about her and laugh together at all the memories. She made us and so many other people happy. May this be the way that she is remembered.
During the hour-long service, stories were recalled about Diana's humanitarian work. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
Greece is turning to the European Union to help rebuild communities destroyed by a wave of forest fires. At least 63 people have been killed in the past week. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 161 points at 13,399. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News in Washington.
The NPR Shop features the newest titles from Rabbit Ears, classic children's literature read by today's biggest stars on CD. Available at npr.org/shop.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from County Materials, supplying homeowners with concrete landscape products for outdoor living and entertaining. Product and showroom information at countymaterials.com.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Miller with my guest, Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Glad to have her along and certainly pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Karen, when we've got animals, chipmunks or whatever, out there in the garden, it's really tough. You know, baits are kind of bad thing in a way because you could, you know, the neighbor's dog or cat comes over or something like that, you've got problems. Fencing them out, rabbits and that, is about all you can do. Maybe a rat trap for the chipmunks.
Well, rabbits are pretty easy.
Yeah, you can fence them out.
Well, and we've got some very good repellents that work well for rabbits. There's one, the trade name actually is called Liquid Fence, and that works pretty darn good. It's not foolproof, but they don't like it. Dried blood is a tried and true repellent. Also using the predator urines, like the fox urine and coyote urine, you put them in little bottles that have holes in the top and the smell wafts, and they don't like the smell of that either. So rabbits aren't, I mean, they're a real problem, but the repellents actually work, and so you feel good when you recommend them that it's not going to be 100%, but at least the person has a good chance. Chipmunks, we really haven't found anything that, you know, there is a couple products out there that label chipmunks in, and our customers have had varying success. Some people feel it helped a little bit. Like I said, trapping them with rat traps is, you know, it's one method. And Lisa go in there using peanut butter for bait. Larger things like the groundhogs, they're tough. But the only way you're going to do is live trap them, and then you have to decide what you're going to do with them after that. So, and that's tough. So you may want to call like a critter control business or the DNR, because they're going to be up on all the local ordinances, what you can actually do, what's humane, and then they can help you out in that way.
Marge in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Marge.
How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Karen, I have an absolutely beautiful ornamental tree that's in the middle of my yard and is my showpiece in the fall. The Chinese is a pagoda dogwood, and it traditionally has beautiful red leaves in the fall. However, it did that August 15th. The leaves were red and weren't very showy, and they have completely dropped.
You know, I have one of those, too, and I've had it in my yard. I love it, and it's like I've had it there for about 20 years. I went on vacation, and I came home this week, and all the leaves are black and falling off. I don't know if it just got too wet. I'm just sick about it, so I don't know the answer to your question. What I'm going to do with mine is just cross my fingers and hope it makes it through the winter. I don't have an answer for it. The exact same thing happened to mine. So maybe it just literally got too wet with all the rain.
And I thought it was because I resist watering. I have drought resistance plantings, and that's the way I care for my my plants. So I don't water, and I'm thinking maybe I should have been more vigilant with that tree. And then I fertilize typically in the spring and the fall with just a Milorganite. Is there anything else I should be doing for this tree now to get it back to hardy need for the spring?
Well, I think there isn't really anything that you can do at this point other than watch the weather. I mean, we've had so much rain, but let's say we go through another 6-8 weeks without rain. You just don't know. So watch what the weather's doing and make sure that it doesn't go into the fall dry, so to speak. So if we don't get an average of a half inch or an inch of rain, you know, every week, you may want to take a soaker hose out there and soak it. And even though you had drought resistance plantings, boy, when we have a summer like what we had this year, I don't leave things to nature in my ornamental garden. And that is something that a lot of gardeners really neglected. I would drive down streets and I literally could hear the trees screaming at me for water. Yeah. And that's something you really need to be diligent with and soak them. And it's not light waterings. It's heavy waterings with slow running force so that it soaks and seeps in really slowly. So the fact that you're started to color up already August 15th, that's before we really got a lot of the rain. That's about right when the water turned on, might have been showing some drought damage. And so all you can really do at this point is watch what happens this fall and the next spring. Really watch what the weather's doing and help it out.
Good luck on our trees.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marge. Thanks a lot for calling. Scott in Amherst, I believe, is next. Scott, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have planted this spring a silver maple, a large bare root silver maple, probably about 2-2.5 inch diameter on the stump. And I watered it and did everything. I've planted several trees like this and always had success. The tree did not leave out at all. And I was just wondering, because I can scratch the bark near the top of the tree and it is green under there. Is there any chance it'll leave out next year?
So you planted it this spring and you never got any leaves?
Correct.
Boy, I'm not giving it much hope. I mean, at this point, you could do one of two things. See what it does next spring or just pop it out this fall yet. And if you wanted to put in another tree. Now, one thing I do want to mention about silver maples, they're nice trees because they grow really quickly, but make sure, you know, you don't have it by a septic system or anything. They are known to have some pretty aggressive roots. So you may want to rethink that choice depending on where it's planted.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you got it from a nursery, And it's this year, most nurseries have some sort of guarantee on their trees. And if it never leafed out,
I think I'd be taking it back.
I'd be taking it back.
Yeah, it's guaranteed till October, and that's why I'm just wondering if I should take it back
I'd probably take it out.
Yeah, I think I'd take it out, but call the nursery first and see what they tell you. Maybe they'll extend their guarantee up, you know, through the spring and let you do a wait and see. I would give them a holler.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot. And Cliff in Milltown, your turn. Hi, Cliff.
Hello. This is a great program.
Thanks. What are you up to?
Well, I've got we're having some trouble with our tomatoes and with bottom rot on them.
Yep.
Blossom end rot.
What is the deal with that?
Well, that's an easy thing to correct. Blossom end rot looks like a fungal disease, but it's not a disease at all. It's actually a conditional thing that while the fruit is ripening, the plant encounters a calcium deficiency, and it doesn't mean that the calcium's not in the soil. Sometimes, for some whatever reason, the roots just aren't able to absorb it, and it typically is with getting wet, dry, wet, dry. Are you growing your tomatoes in containers or in the garden?
It is in raised beds.
In containers, we see it a lot more often because sometimes, you know, when it's hot in the summer, it's almost impossible to keep your tomato watered enough without it having getting some water stress in between. So what you can do for it is spray it with a calcium spray, and it's actually labeled blossom end rot spray. And if you look at the label directions, it's liquid calcium, and it does correct itself right away. You'll notice it in the developing fruit. The new fruit are fine. We don't typically recommend spraying as a preventative until you see it, because sometimes the spray itself can cause some burning on the foliage. The good news is the fruit that you have with the blossom end rot, you can cut that off. It won't hurt you to eat the good part of the fruit, but just get a spray that's labeled for blossom end rot, and I think you'll be pleased with the results. Just try to keep your soil moisture a little more even next year. Maybe do some mulching.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. Ron in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thanks very much. Years ago, a city forester explained that in some cities, silver maples, tree of heaven or ailanthus, and cottonwood, those three species are banned as street trees because whenever there's a strong windstorm or a freezing rain ice storm, they have thousands of them laying in the street, blocking the sidewalks and the driveway. So I just wanted to mention that to the person who lost their silver maple. Yeah. Please consider a red maple, a Norway maple, sugar maple, anything that's a maple but not the silver ones. I'll let you respond to that later if you have time. I'm mainly calling because a friend wants to transplant an evergreen tree. It's about 4 to 5 feet tall, 2 to 3 feet at the bottom. It's conical. I call it a spruce because it has needles 1/2 to 3/4 inch long, and they're sharp. If you grab a handful, it feels like a baby ball of brush. It pushes you back. So that's why I think it's a spruce. How big a root ball do we need to take? Could we dig it up bare root and transplant it? Can we transplant it during September? Should we wait till October or November? It's in a wet soil near the arboretum currently, and I'm not sure exactly where they want to go with it.
You certainly, if you were going to do it this fall, I would do it, you know, in September, you know, anytime now in the next couple of weeks. But I think you'd be safer if it's a possibility for you to wait until spring. I think spruce is one of those trees that if you're buying a new spruce that's in a container, you certainly can plant them at any time. But I believe when you're digging them up, I've been told, I could be wrong, but that spring is a little safer to make the transplant.
Which month?
Well, depending on when you can work the soil, like
April. As
soon
as you can get in.
Yeah, beginning of April when it's a little cooler. And the other thing I recommend, I've had really good luck using the transplanting solutions. It's not something you put right in the hole, but it's a liquid that is actually, it has some rooting hormones along with a very, very dilute fertilizer that will help stimulate the root system and really keep the thing watered. Depending on what the weather does next spring, you know, soaking it a couple times a week for the first few weeks and then soaking it maybe once a week all summer unless we get a good rain. And then continue doing that for the next couple of seasons. With trees, especially ones that you're literally moving like that, you want to take a little extra tender, loving care on them. And try to get as big a root ball as you can. I'd say at least as wide, if you can, if it's practical, as what those branches are coming out.
Right.
Ouch. that'll weigh about 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, I had a beautiful blue spruce put in my yard, and literally the company had to just come and take this giant cone out. It wasn't something that would have been practical to do on my own.
Oh, okay. All thanks right. a lot for your help.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ron. And Leanne in Ironwood, Michigan. Hello to you.
Hi.
What can we do?
My question is, I have a Jack Nanny clematis, mm-hmm. and I just purchased it this year, and we are in zone 3 mm-hmm. In the Upper Peninsula. It did not start getting new shoots until August. It seemed like it took a real long time to catch. And my question is how do I protect that over the winter and get my best chance for it to come back in the spring?
Well, you know, we have our clematis, the Jack Mannii, actually labeled as zone 4. So,
oh, you do?
So I definitely would give it some good winter mulching. And by that, I mean when things freeze off this fall, mound it up with some soil. Not too early, towards the end of October. And because you don't want to do it too early, because if we have a late fall and a warm fall, sometimes you can actually rot things. So mound it up with a soil mulch, allow that to freeze solid, and then put some evergreen boughs on top of that, and that'll keep that mound frozen. Now, you want to wait to put your evergreen boughs on until that mound is frozen. So sometimes around here, that's been Christmas the last couple
right.
of seasons.
Right.
Because you don't want all the rodents moving in and taking up shop there for the winter. And then in the spring, you need to pull that off, obviously, so the thing can grow in it. The one good thing about the Jack Mannii is it blooms off of new growth. So that particular variety of clematis, every year, you know, if you leave all the old stuff this fall, and then next spring, in at the end of March, cut it back to about 12 inches, and because it'll bloom
okay.
off of the. That's one that you want to prune heavily. Some clematis bloom off of their old growth, so they don't recommend pruning so severely.
So every sprout that is coming out of the ground, or is it one main sprout? Cut that to 12 inches.
Next spring. Yep.
Next spring.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And let it die off. Don't do anything to any of the. Sprouts or anything
yep.
this fall.
I just
okay.
let nature take its course, and then real late give it some extra winter mulch to you know, help it through the winter. And if you end up with a good snow cover, then that's your best mulch of all. But
right.
unfortunately,
you
can't depend on that.
And well, we usually do.
Oh, okay. See, here we can't. So
no.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks,
good luck with it.
Yeah, thanks, Leah. No, we sure can't. Ed in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Thank you for the program. Yesterday, I picked up a juniper. Andorra compacta,
mm-hmm.
Youngstown. But anyway, 15 years ago, I planted, you know, a total of 7 of these things. And I don't remember how I put it in, but they all grew except for this one spot. And this will be the third time that I'm trying to plant something. And I picked up some evergreen tree and shrub, you know, plant food, 1477. And it says that it says to, you know, feed at the time of planting in the spring, but postpone feeding in the fall. And my one question is, should I leave it out? Am I getting too close to fall? And the second question is, it says to mix peat with the soil, which I've done before, but not very much. What percentage soil to the peat should I put in the hole?
Well, this particular area you keep having problems. Is it not draining well? Does the water puddle there?
The soil seems to be quite compact.
Okay.
It doesn't get a lot of rain though.
Okay.
But it's when I dug a hole, it's very compact, uh-huh. very black dirt.
Okay. Well, what I would recommend is there's a reason that obviously you've tried several trees there before and junipers, and they keep dying on you. So what I would do is try to remove a big chunk of that soil,
mm-hmm.
Like area that's twice the big of the root ball of what you're putting in, twice the diameter, twice the depth. And then I would get some topsoil, maybe mix a little bit of the topsoil that you pull out of there, and I'd mix like maybe a third peat moss and maybe a third compost to cow manure if you have some leaf compost, and make a whole new mix and give it a whole new thing. Because I'm wondering if the soil was real compacted, what people don't realize, if you work in wet soil, you literally break the soil structure and you end up with cement, and there's no way to get that back. And the fact that you said when you were digging in there, it felt like cement, that it was really compacted, that might be part of the problem. And junipers like well-draining soil, so maybe it's just been staying too wet. And as far as the fertilizer, yeah, I do agree. Now is not the greatest time to be fertilizing your evergreens. You don't want to push a lot of new growth going into the fall because it'll be a little less winter hardy. Sometimes a real late fertilizing after things have quit growing, but the roots are still active, or I think better yet is waiting till the spring.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also, I forgot to mention, it's about 14 inches from a sidewalk. Could that be posing a problem for that?
Well, possibly there might be a material from the concrete that's leaching. It could be really alkaline. Sometimes you get a lot of lime. So taking a soil sample down to the university is always a good bet. They'll tell you your pH. They'll tell you your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium level. They can tell you the amount of organic matter. So you could get a lot of clues from that, too. I think a soil sample is about $15. Are you in the Madison area?
In Wausau.
Wausau.
Oh, okay. Well, check there where your extension is. Or I don't know if you can mail them down here.
Yes, you can.
Okay, and the address is on Mineral Point Road, so you could just key in the UW Extension and find the soils lab if they don't have a place up in Wausau for you.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot. Arlene in New Berlin, hello to you.
Good morning. I'm so happy to talk to your guest. I have three honeysuckles, and I have arbors on the east side and one on the west side of the house, and the house backyard faces south. One of the honeysuckle vines is growing very profusely, and I noticed that the vines, even when they're growing, they're kind of hard. The other one is which is on the east side of the house. They're both on the east side. This one, it's growing, but it has no buds, and it's twining around the arbor, but there's no buds. And my other one on the west side, it had blooms. And but it hasn't rebloomed. What do we do now as fall approaches? One is really got a lot of flowers on it, and I also had some hummingbirds taking the nectar from it, which was very interesting. But I'd like to know what we can do to, make sure we have a lot of blooms next year.
You know, that is so frustrating. You plant three of the same plants and one does great. And, there isn't always a real good explanation. I wouldn't do anything about it this fall. I think I would just leave it alone and prune it back next spring. Try to initiate some new growth. Give it a good shot of fertilizer next spring, something balanced. And if you wanted to work a little granular around it, like every month or 6 weeks, or you could do a liquid feed, like a 20-20-20 every couple of weeks,
uh-huh.
And see if we can do that, if that helps any. The east light should be plenty for a vining uh-huh. honeysuckle. They're usually pretty easy to grow. So
yes.
You just might try pruning it and stimulating it, the growth, new growth, and give it a good shot of fertilizer.
How far back do you prune it?
Well, I wouldn't get real crazy. Maybe like a third. And
okay.
See if that works.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Arlene. Deb in Kewaunee. On to you. Hi, Deb.
Hi. This summer, I planted a couple of passion flower vines to grow up around a light pole.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing really great until yesterday when we had a different landscaper come in and hacked them down to the ground because he didn't know what he was doing. So are those going to come back from the root, or do I have to start over next year?
Well, I've read varying things on passion vine, and I've had people tell me they winter over in this part of the country, and I just never can quite believe it. So I guess to answer your question, I think it's going to be a wait and see. But otherwise, if you do get a lot of growth yet this fall, you may consider wintering it in the house and digging them up and bring it in. But if you want to try, if you've got a variety that is supposed to be winter hardy, then I would just wait and see. A lot of times if it was established, you hopefully should get some growth from those roots.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Early on I mentioned hostas and that brown mm-hmm. edges of the leaves. What causes that?
There's actually fungal diseases, and there is, it can be from a few things. It can be from stress, drought.
Mm-hmm.
It can be from getting too much sun. There are some varieties of hostas that will take a little bit more sun than others. And then, again, more sun means you need to water them more often. So it could just be a drought stress thing. There also are some diseases that will attack them. So you can, if you get it every single year and you feel like you're diligent with your watering, I think it would be worth taking some leaves down to the plant pathology lab at the UW, and they will actually put them under the microscope, try to determine what disease you have, and then recommend if there's any preventative spray program. Whenever you have disease, the fungicides that you use are just preventing the spread of the disease. Mm-hmm. So getting at it early, at the very first sign, is key. So that would be some of the options. If it's just happened this year, I might chalk it up to drought. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we got all this rain, and just there's so much fungus going on because everything's so moist when, you know, we get 10 days solid of rain. I wouldn't maybe worry about it too much. I'd probably just try to clean them up real good this fall and do a wait and see next year. But if it's something that you get every single year, I would take some leaves down the UW and get it identified.
Do you have a website, do you not?
Mm-hmm. It's at johansons.com. And we don't sell on our website. It's just mainly there for information. We have gardening tips on there. So some of the common problems you can link into, look at some of the little sheets that we've written up. But even better is we have a link to the UW Extension's website, because sometimes their address is hard to give to our customers. And so we just tell them to go to johansons.com. On the front page, you'll see, click here for a link for the UW Extension. And the bulletins on there are so wonderful because they're written for our area and they're written with the homeowner in mind. And that's where I go a lot of times when people have questions. I just can't keep everything in this small brain of mine. And it's a very helpful site.
Karen, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to another visit.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison, family owned and operated since 1960. Always fun to have her on, and she will be back, and we will do this again. Just to let you know about next week's Garden Talk show, Lynn Steiner will talk about landscaping with native plants in Wisconsin, so we'll look forward to that. Monday on the program, we'll be talking with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. And, of course, he has, as always, some great advice for those of us who use personal computers, which is most of us these days. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.